Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group and proud host of VFE. And today's guest, it is just an absolute honor. I have read all of his books. I have unpacked and unwrapped various conceptual models and frameworks that he have developed. And when we talk about disruptive innovation in the context of reimagination and transformation, Michael Horn was doing this in what I call the BC stage of education before COVID-19. So now I guess it got a little flavor and it got cool in the AC stage of education, which is the AC stage of education. And it is an absolute honor to have Michael Horn, who is the co-founder and distinguished fellow at the Clayton Christensen Institute, and also a professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and just a renowned best-selling author for multiple books that we're going to cover today. But yes, I'm going to say this to my VFE audience. I am fanboying Michael Horn right now. So Michael, it is great to have you on.
Thank you so much. It's a great, it's just a pleasure to be with you. I can't wait to talk and, sounds like we have some spheres of overlap, some things that we just get geeked out about. So I can't wait for the conversation.
Absolutely. And to my fans, to my audience, yes, we have Michael Horn on. So I'm going to bring the rigor. I am going to bring a lot of high level deep questions because, again, we have one of the national, I should say global experts here. And to have Michael on VFE, this is a time where now we get to talk about these really large macro level concepts of transformation, disruptive innovation, and then specifically the work that Michael is doing at the Clayton Christensen Institute and what this means now as the evolution, or I should say the model of education, continues to revolutionize and evolutionize itself. But Michael, this first question is a fun question, right? Because my audience will get to know who you are, what Michael Horn is about. A lot of people just read your work. A lot of people heard you, whether it be keynotes or podcasts. But now we get to know who Michael Horn is. You are the co-founder and distinguished fellow at the Clayton Christensen Institute, and you also serve as a professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. So for people, or I should say educational leaders in my audience who do not know Michael Horn, what song describes your innovation and disruptive work in the education industry?
Yeah, I thought about this because I'll be honest, I'm a jazz guy. That's where, like, that's my musical taste. That's where I go to. That's my happy place. But as I thought about it, I think A Million Dreams from The Greatest Showman is the answer I would give, because there's a sense of we can create the world in which we want to live, right? Like P.T. Barnum, There were no circuses like that, right? And we can create the education world, this unbridled opportunity for all kids, regardless of their zip code, background, origin, right? Like, we can create this opportunity. And so it is at once hopeful, empowering, and it says to education entrepreneurs, you all are the ones that can create this. The teachers, Don't wait on the sidelines. You imagine that future and let's create it for those students tomorrow.
Absolutely, Michael. A Million Dreams. I could tell you when you stated we create the world we live in. I always reference back and potentially a mutual friend of yours, Alan Kay. His famous quote is the best way to predict the future is to invent it. And creating these opportunities, Michael, specifically when we talk about this AI first economy that we're living in, more in the lines of how we're empowering Generation Z and Generation Alpha to be able to create this new world, specifically now how COVID and this explosion of artificial intelligence or intelligence systems have pushed us at least 20 years ahead. A half a century, I always say, because now we're focusing on that 22nd century competency development and design of systems. A Million Dreams. And now with this world where it's exponential and their level of intersectionality, yes, it is up to our students to empower them to create a million dreams. But Michael, I want to expand on your work at the Clayton Christensen Institute, the Christensen Institute, right? It is a world-renowned organization that provides different organizations and businesses, right, refining their business model concepts focused on outcomes. Now, one of the frameworks I have rooted in my work since, Michael, the early 2000s, yes, the early 2000s is the disruptive innovation model. In the AC stage of education, after COVID-19, for my listeners and viewers who don't know what AC stage of education is, these disruptive models have become a necessity in the sector to act as a guidepost for transformation. So, from a level setting standpoint, in the context of the disruptive innovation model, how do we strategically apply the implementation concepts to change varying operating processes that have been historically static, the military model within education?
Yeah, well, first you're right. Static command control, very top down, right? We talk about how, No Child Left Behind started to hold accountable schools for outcomes, except that they didn't give them any of the means to the inputs to change the way that chairs are arranged, right? And so you just would never innovate that way in any other sector, and yet we've asked our educators to, which is crazy. Just to quickly for your audience define the term disruptive innovation, because I think it's something people hear disruptive. Oh, I don't know if I want that. Like that's Michael Horn in middle school. I don't know if I want that kid in my class, right? So what we mean by it is it's an innovation that comes along that it's actually initially it looks like, well, that's not as good as the best, right? So Khanmigo tutoring system, right? Well, that's not as good as Michael Connor getting to tutor me one-on-one. Clearly, I would learn more from you. But for the kid that doesn't have access to you because your time's limited, that Khanmigo tutor, better than the alternative, nothing at all. And that's where disruptions get their start, where the alternative is nothing because they're a game changer in terms of access, convenience, affordability, and so forth. And they take root there, and then they get better and better and better because technology is constantly improving. And as you noted, the rate of change right now in AI is just, it's staggering how fast this is improving. And so what at one point is primitive, at another point we say, yeah, actually, I'd like that as well. And people in the mainstream system, it's not that they're saying Michael Connor's still not a better tutor. It's that they're saying, well, that's actually good enough and it's more affordable. I'll take the Khanmigo, thank you very much, right? And so that's how disruption changes systems over time. It's when the mainstream start to say, no thanks, I'll take the good enough with the affordability and accessibility always on. And that's how we see change. And for a school system, to me, what this is you got to find those pockets like yesterday where you can start trying these things at no risk with students, right? I get it. Educators are very, small c conservative. They want to be very careful about innovating when students are around. Although I'll note the status quo is also its own risk because we know it's failing large numbers of individuals. But like, put that aside for a second. Find those areas, find those pockets. We can't offer a particular class. Well, what if we use technology to do it in a very different way? We can't offer tutoring. What if we used it? We can't create, a business plan for kids to come up with some entrepreneurial idea to solve a problem in their community. Well, these are the places where we can implement radically different designs of teaching and learning. Let them start there. Let them start small. Let us perfect it, iterate. And if it's successful, other teachers and students and parents are going to say, I want to be part of that thing. And start to move into it over time. And so I say it sounds super jarring, but innovation is actually a gradual process, right? It's how did you go bankrupt? Gradually, then all at once, right?
Right.
That's innovation as well. It's bit by bit by bit until all of a sudden say everyone says, well, of course, why weren't we doing this way the whole time? Well, because we were learning, we were getting better, and more people were saying, I want to be part of that train, that revolution.
Absolutely. And Michael, I want to highlight on something, right, where you alluded to it around this gradual process of innovation. I always like to say innovation is a large body of work that we see, small scale for changes and increasing the change in the step function manner, right? But
Mm-hmm.
you used a phrase and a word, I would say before COVID was taboo in education, right? Radical different designs, when I think of new models. Iterate, right? That's a word that was it was a novelty in the BC stage, where now is a part of the academic, or I should say industry vernacular in the AC stage of education. We even
Yeah.
heard, right, and Michael, and and when my practices, when I was a superintendent, I always used to use experimentation in that context of finding the pockets that work, right? Now, when we think about this, right, experimentation, ideation, iteration, new model designs, disrupting and interrogating core processes, disrupting in a positive context. Now we're looking at metarupters, right? This is moving to that next level. Michael, this is a sub question. How do we now, right, continue to invite these practices that hasn't been the standard normalization in education, and to continuously defy the status quo, albeit we have traditionalists that still wants to keep it the norm when our
Yeah.
economic demand is showing the antithesis of what we're experiencing?
Yeah, 100%. I think two things. One, let's just be real for a moment. Districts are losing students, particularly in urban areas, but all throughout the country, right? As students are flocking to micro schools and other forms of
Yeah.
schooling that frankly are doing these practices. They're lean, they're nimble, and so they're doing it, right? And so it's happening. And what I always tell district soups and people who are sort of used to the slow processes, you got to figure out a way to do it yourself because it's getting done now. That's the big difference from before COVID and after COVID is parents feel like, I remember a woman in Detroit, she was there helping homeschooling moms. And I asked a question, some of these kids really come from nothing. You think you can get them reading, in a homeschool environment? She looked at me and she was like, 13% of Detroit, high schoolers are reading proficiently. You telling me I can't do better than that? And I was like, okay, I'm hands off. You're right, right? I'm stepping back, right? Like, and so we have to, one, acknowledge it's happening. And I think superintendents and districts and schools, they need to get on the same page and figure out that those rhythms are part of it. Number two, I think just like the command control status quo has been part of the process or DNA, right, of districts, I think frankly, all the things you just talked about, the ideation, right, the iteration, the experimentation, the prototyping, all those words you just said, we need to now build those as processes into our schools so that it's not
Absolutely.
the ad hoc educator who happens to have a far-reaching vision and they go off, and sort of do it on their own, rogue style, right? That's frankly what's happening with AI right now in a lot of districts. It's frankly, educators are so far ahead of the processes and systems and even the students, I think, in many cases, but we don't know how to adjust or catch up. We've got
Absolutely.
to build this into process so that it's orderly and consistent and everyone is learning how to do that. I think those core tenets of design theory or
Yeah.
innovation theory design, that's got to be the DNA of the new school district so that it's not an accident, but that's just how I do things. Like in the same way a teacher, frankly, I delivered a lesson last year on whatever, cause of World War I. Okay, I'm going to make that lesson a little bit better next year. I'm iterating, right? That's once a year. How do we just increase that velocity of iteration and innovation so that we're constantly improving the model and how we're doing things so that over the course of a year, the experience a student is getting at the end of the year is that much better than what they were getting when they walked in on day one.
Yes, Michael. This is great because when you talk about improving core processes over time, it aligns to my conceptual model, the disruptive effect model. First pillar of the anchors of innovation science is lean practices, right? You don't traditionally hear lean practices in education. However, when you talk about this constant iteration of improving processes, those learning milestones, and continuing to build on the milestones that again is aligned to lean processes. I love how you talked about the innovation theory and core tenets around that. And Control and Demand, our friend Fred Taylor, right? Top down
Yeah.
versus Peter Drucker's work, which is dynamic work, which is bottom up, my friend. You mentioned Comigo. And as you were talking about that and using that example, it just was referencing back the 1984 study of Benjamin Bloom, the Two Sigma problem. Now we're in the AC stage of education. I always say there's that level of Two Sigma prosperity, complementing that with AI. But Michael, now this is where I'm going to fanboy you, okay?
All right.
I read
Is
all
it
your
back?
books. Michael, I read all your books. I read all your books. I'm not going to lie. I read all your books. The two classics I love to reference all the time is Disrupting Class, How Disruptive Innovation Will Change the Way the World Learns, and the second book, which is Blended, Using Disruptive Innovation to Improve Schools. Now, we will get to your new book in a moment, but what are the major themes that should be integral in the context of innovative design in a digital paradigm that is
Yeah.
revolutionizing the global economy? So we're going to talk about a mutual friend. I want to be able to level set around exploitation and exploration. Yes, I brought up Professor Michael Tushman.
Yes, you
Michael, love
did.
you, miss you. But when we talk about now the concepts that you developed in those books from an exploitation exploration lens, what does that exploitation looks like in the AC stage of education
Oh,
with
that's
your
such a
book?
good question. Such a good question. So here's my take: is exploitation or sustaining innovation, right? In Clay Christensen language, it's so interesting to me. By the way, this is an aside. I love Michael Tushman's work. It is so parallel to Clay Christensen's work. And sometimes I know people are like, "Oh, they say different things," and I'm like, "No, they don't. Step back. They're swimming in the same direction."
Right.
So I
I
just
had a
want to
few
I want to
Clay's,
say that,
Michael. I
yeah.
had a few Clay's book, and then of course, Professor Tushman's book, Lead and Disrupt.
Yep.
I mean, literally, when we talk about discontinuous change, sustained change,
Yes.
architectural change, same thing that Clay was talking about in his work, sustained
Same thing.
innovation and disruptive innovation. But just love how both of them bring that common theme together
I
around
couldn't
how
agree
we need to
more.
change. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. And I know there was a dispute. They'd say, Clay was of the belief you really had to have an autonomous organization to do the disruption. And Michael would say, well, no, core organizations can do it themselves. But then his examples were always autonomous groups within the organization. And Clay's examples were always autonomous groups within the organization. So I was like, you guys agree. You guys agree. So that geeking out aside for a moment. So the exploitation to me, and this is what we say in Blended, right? Is that every single classroom, if you're not flipping the classroom or doing a station rotation tomorrow, like you're doing something wrong, because every single classroom in America, it's an easy step to start to personalize learning for every single child and give them far more opportunities to not just learn knowledge. I'm not one of those guys that says knowledge is irrelevant. It's still important, but I want to do something with it. I want to apply it in a project to develop my critical thinking, communication, et cetera, skills, right? And so, from my standpoint, using the technology in those ways is sort of just the no-brainer. And I saw a study recently, like all these math tutoring programs, so Khan Academy, iReady, like iExcel, like you name it. They all have Dreambox Learning. They all have great studies behind them, like, really boosting learning. But then you read the fine print, only 5% of students use them to get those effect sizes. And you're like, what's going on with the other 95%? And my
Correct.
take is it's a couple things, but one of them, I think we're not building nearly enough engaging stuff to get more students excited about different topics. But number two, I think we don't spend nearly enough time on the classroom design so that, like, there's a rotation. I'm going to go, I have a 30-minute chunk now where I'm working in a small group with the teacher. Okay, now I got a 30-minute chunk where I'm going on Khan Academy at self-paced because in that small group discussion, I just realized I don't understand these concepts, and so I'm going to work harder on them, right? Whatever it is. I just think that's the no-brainer when you talk about exploitation. The technologies are here. They're pretty good. It's about the model in which they're used, and we can do it in the traditional classroom. We can do it to get the level of personalization and acceleration for students. I think tomorrow, I just, you know, we know the biggest challenge for elementary school classrooms, last thing here, is qualified math teachers. A lot of elementary school teachers, they're a little nervous about their math skills. I got news for you. Like for the kindergarten, first, second grader, getting them on ST math for like 25 minutes a day, that would be for, look, not 20% of kids, but 80% of the kids, it would be a huge improvement over their, over what they have right now. And the teachers, it's not that they'd be irrelevant. They'd be working with the kids and they'd have a backup there to backstop them when they're not sure about a concept, to really make sure that no one's falling through the gaps or that they're giving information that's not, you know, not correct, right? And so I think there's just huge opportunity.
Excellent, Michael. Michael, two sub variant questions or variances based off of your responses. When I think of this level of disruption, right, and specifically looking at it from the disruptive innovation theory, you were very intentional of what you how you use this phrase, classroom design, classroom or lesson design. When I think about the static military approaches from the first industrial model, we'd always say classroom lesson planning. Michael, if you can distinguish first, I like to say the first industry, or I should say the first stage of the Industrial Revolution, classroom lesson planning versus the fourth Industrial Revolution, classroom and lesson design. What are the differences?
Yeah, to me, in the you know, the first industrial revolution design, you walk into a classroom, you know where the front of the room is because that's where the teacher's desk, that's where the chalkboard, that's where they stand, and they stand and deliver, right? And the lesson plan is all around whole class pace guide, right? We're moving in lockstep. When we're talking about, you know, the jump into the fourth industrial revolution or whatever you want to call it, right? These new models, I don't think we're talking about classrooms anymore. We're talking about learner studios. We're talking about learning environments, right? We're talking, you know, and that all of a sudden says, you know, even beyond a learner studio, learning environment, I can learn digitally. I can learn in my physical learner studio. I can learn outside of the four walls of the classroom in my community and be learning. Because look, let's be real, the kids are always learning. It's what are they learning and where are they learning it? And so that's how I think about it, is that all of a sudden we don't have a front of the room. Each student, right, is getting what they need when they need it. That doesn't mean it's isolated or individualized. It's still very, you know, there's lots of opportunity for group work, group fun, group collaboration, group, you know, sometimes people say, you know, oh, I don't want the, you know, my kid teaching the other kids because that's that teacher being lazy and shifting work onto my kid. That's how you, as a kid, when you teach something, that's how you really master the material. And what an empowering thing for that kid to be like, wow, I was just able to do that. And by the way, the next lesson in another subject, the other way, you know, other kids are going to know the answer and be excited to show their might, right? And so I just think that's those are, we need to stop thinking of it as like that's passing the buck and more, no, that's an opportunity for everyone to learn and really master what they want. So I just see the new models as much more fluid and permeable, and kids moving at their rate. And frankly, we've had this. Like, if you go to a Montessori classroom, which was, you know, circa 1900s, like Maria Montessori figured all this out with before digital technology was there, right? She was empowering these kids to move. And now we've got even cooler tools that can continue to support that as kids get older and older and older.
Absolutely. And Michael, this is I'm going to ask this question later in the podcast because you alluded to learning environments, intentional learning design, but I think for a level of coherence, Michael always talks about that organizational coherence, alignment, coherence, or congruence in his language within the book. I always want to now look at it now, this level of disrupting the system. We'll get to that later, that there's alignment with regards to this new classroom design and these new learning environments, studio, flexible, adaptive environments. But I always want to, bring that back to how do we create the system to cohere with this new classroom design. So we'll get to that. But Mike, I want to talk about your new book that was released last summer, From Reopen to Reinvent, Recreating Schools for Every Child. You underpin the importance of creating new learning environments and pedagogical approaches for Generation Z and Generation Alpha. You talked about how we can get students involved, intentionally engaged. I love how you use that word, engaged, instead of what we saw in the BC State of Education, strategic compliance. Underscoring the themes from your new book, how do leaders authentically address the learning needs of Generation Z and Generation Alpha in this new AI economy?
Well, that's such a good question. What I would say actually goes back to what we were talking about before about lean principles, which is essentially lean principles of design innovation are making hypotheses or assumptions, testing those, and then learning from them, and then adjusting, right? Iterating. That's the scientific method. And that is how we learn. It's not just how we design. And so I think for educators to be modeling that behavior themselves in everything that they're doing, hey, here's the test I'm putting out there. I'm learning, I'm adapting, and being deliberate and transparent about that to the learners. I think that sets it a huge example that's extremely authentic that says, like, this is how we learn. And by the way, when I fail, I don't think of it as a bad F word. I think of that as a small F failure because it helped me learn from my mistakes. And so that's the second thing. And then I guess the third thing I would say is don't hide from it. Like, knowledge of AI. So you can actually demonstrate learning by saying, I'm going to get smarter about what the AI is. I'm going to show how you learn the knowledge that I need to understand what these things are. That's awesome because we are actually trying to build lifelong learners in our in this day and age who are going to constantly be up-leveling their own skill sets and knowledge bases. And so you actually show, I'm going to make the investment and I'm not always going to know the answer. And that's okay because I'm willing to ask the question and model that. And if you know the answer, that's awesome because I'm going to allow you as the kid to update my thinking. And then we're showing we don't believe in these hierarchies. We just want the right answer to up level us and make progress. So
Michael,
that's how I would think about it.
I love that because you talk about lean principles of design. And to my audience, this is one of the answers that you want to play back, Michael. I always encourage my audience and my viewers of VFV to use this as an asynchronous professional learning mechanism where that they can go back, play specific answers, expand, explore, research on various sentiments. And this is one of the answers I would want my audience and viewers of VFV to go back and play. Because again, when you talk about lean design of principles or lean principles of design, goes back to my first pillar in my conceptual model, the anchors of innovation science, lean practices. You put it in a very simplistic form. I inundate it with a lot of business and academic jargon in my book. But yes, Michael, I hypothesize or developing hypotheses, testing it, and scaling best practices when we see outcomes. I always encourage, and again, this is new language I've been encouraging leaders across the country, is to treat various tenets, processes within the actual operating model as an MVP, a minimal viable product. Where
Yes.
it's that whole constant concepts of R&D and L&D in this parallel implementation with one another. But Michael, thank you for expanding upon that because I don't think we as educators lean on lean principles of design, innovation by design enough because I was just at a conference where I provided the preliminary and I said that the precursor or the pretext to AI and digital reimagination is that we have to adopt these principles of being lean so that the AI There's a lot of coherence and alignment, but more on the lines, we're understanding and learning the impact and influence that's having on our students as well as our schools. Anything you'd like to add to that, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you just underpinned is the important thing, which is the technology is the secondary question. Process and purpose is where we need to start our conversations. And all too often, I find when I'm out with districts or speaking at different conferences or whatever, is like they want to know what the thing is. And I'm like, no, we got to think about what the processes and purpose and why is. And once we've answered that and start to build in these things, then we can figure out, okay, this is the latest technology, we'll drop it in, right? But if we
Absolutely.
don't have our processes and our foundation right, then like you're just layering AI over, the first industrial revolution, top-down classroom. What fun is that? And on top of which, yeah, like AI hallucinates and all these things. If we've given it as a source of truth, like we do with our textbooks, we're just misleading kids, right? In my view. And so it's got to be in, I think, a setting where that testing and learning is actually a core part of the learning model itself, because then it makes sense. So, yeah.
Now, Michael, great point in that. And I want to go on to the next question because I think it segues nicely because we're talking about innovation and artificial intelligence is becoming synonymous in this AC stage of education. So when I think about this, right, that we're seeing this evolution, these meta-ruptors of AI, various intelligent platforms and systems that we're seeing. So beyond just applying technological tools, right? What suggestions do you have for leaders regarding developing meaningful professional learning focused on innovation, creativity, and AI? Because when I think about now this level of standardization of what we do in education around professional learning, I see an incongruence or a misalignment with the necessary capabilities that's needed for these 22nd century systems, right? 22nd century structures, i.e., or I should say, e.g., the learning studio that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, how can we start creating meaningful professional learning series for our teachers and leaders regarding programs, tools, and strategies?
Great question. And I at least from my perspective, it starts again with modeling, right? What we want
Yeah.
learning to look like. And it's not the three times a year someone like you or me comes in, delivers a all-day workshop, and it's relevant to some teachers. So they're super attentive. It's not relevant to some because they already understand it, and it's not relevant to others because it's just like not on their radar screen. And so they're all grading homework, right? While we're working our tails off. And instead, what I think you want is a personalized learning model for all the teachers as well, where professional development is something that is infused in the daily practice of their craft as well. They're constantly trying to get better and level up and so forth. And it acknowledges, hey, some of your teachers, like they know more about AI than either you or I do, right? And so let them run and incorporate in the practice, and others, like baby steps, right? And so they're learning about some of these processes for the first time, some of these terms, and they're trying to figure out what does it mean for what I'm trying to get my students to do. And I think all that centers two things. Number one, it centers what are the outcomes we're trying to get for our students? Let's start there. And then two, let's make sure we're providing personalized processes and pathways for the teachers to be able to proceed in the way that makes sense for where they are in their craft to help more and more of their students get to those promised outcomes that we think are important.
Absolutely, Michael. I love how you said personalized processes for our leaders and our teachers. I always say that if we're going to make radical shifts in the context of pedagogy, we need to make the same alignment with regards to andragogy, adult learning, radical
100%.
shifts around this whole professional learning model that is more personalized. But Michael, I can tell you, if you were standing in front of me and I had my pen and paper, we're going to add the third element of learning. heterogogy, self-directed learning, whatever Michael's saying, I'm going back and I'm expanding on it. But Michael, when I want to bring this for level setting purposes for this next question, right? Disruptive and sustained innovation. One of the my value proposition and for my educators out there, theory of action is that we need to start creating R&D learning ecosystems for the 21st century. Completely defies the old operating model that we're so used to, static, more sequential. If there's a bottleneck that goes on, there's a lot, there's immense stalemate where there's that level of exacerbation with regards to access gaps, opportunity gaps, whatever it may be. From a systems level shift regarding various processes, apparatuses within the operating model, right? How can we now start to revolutionize education to move towards these 22nd century R&D learning ecosystems where it is fundamentally different from what we can even think of this first revolution, industrial revolution model that we still underpin, that we're still underpinning despite the critical learning that we had in the DC stage of education during COVID-19?
So a great way to frame it too. I in my mind, I want to see two sets of activities going on at all times in a school, right? Number one, in the sustaining innovation, I want educators on the ground with freedom of time to constantly be interrogating practice, to be figuring out from other districts, from other schools, from other curriculum providers, from their own reading of research, how do we get our schools, our system better, right? And I want it built in itself. And so, frankly, if I'm being super blunt, less administrators in the central office, more educators in the schools themselves, some of whom who, their job is not always to like teach, but to actually have large blocks of time where they're getting to do that interrogation and getting to then to support the fellow educators in actually taking the research and actually implementing it, right? And so it's actually part of the process. And then the second part is doing the same thing on the disruptive side, which is constantly be looking out, you know, where's that area where we can do something radically different, right? Where can we move, where we can we implement a learner studio instead of a class, you know, traditional classroom, right? And I would argue for, you know, teachers, or excuse me, school administrators, take that dual transformation approach or the ambidextrous, right, that Michael Tushman talks about, right? Dual transformation is the Clay Christensen sort of framework. Ambidextrous is the Michael Tushman. It's the same thing, right? Which is that we essentially are going to have leadership sit in the middle of these two efforts of the sustaining and the disruption, the exploit and the explore, constantly saying, we've got to be doing both. The explorer or transformation B, you've got to be inventing the future that we don't even know yet. You've got to be looking for those opportunities, and we will protect you. We will make sure you get the resources you need, but we will protect you so that the existing doesn't say, oh, you think you're going to teach math that way? No. I'm going to show you how you teach math, the traditional, right? And sort of bear down on that. And then frankly, though, the leadership is doing one other thing. They're looking at the experiments and those, you know, the transformation Bs, the exploring, and they're saying, hey, Michael Horn, great idea. It didn't work out. We're not going to keep doing that one, right? Like, we got the test, we got the answer, we learned you're, you know, it sounded like a cool idea, but it's just not the right way to work for our kids because we agreed that these are the sorts of outcomes we want to be seeing, if that makes any sense. And the kids aren't engaging the way we thought they would. Okay. Success there is not that my idea was right or wrong. It's success is we learned something and we were able to make a decision of go, no go, right? And that's what leadership is sitting in the middle there, really navigating both sides of this and helping each side march forward and do the R&D that they need to do to be able to actually action, you know, put these things into action and make decisions of do we stick with it or do we sunset it?
Michael, I appreciate your answer because I think the greatest polarity that we're experiencing in education is this equilibrium between sustained innovation as well as disruptive innovation, and how we can be able to level set that and leverage both in this polarity manner so that we can move towards this R&D learning ecosystem of the 22nd century. I was a part of an author study of my book, Michael, and I had a great question, and it resonated with me. And they said, Dr. Connor, we have 71 years left in the 21st century. Why are you focusing on the 22nd century? I said, there are two things why we're focusing on. Even though there's 71 years left, the pandemic coupling the evolution of AI has moved us forward a half a century, right? So when we think about it, and we're already now 2 years in, I should say 2 years in into this whole context of the AC stage of education, actually going into year three, that leaves us 18 years to prepare for Generation Z and Generation Alpha because of what the pandemic and the explosion of AI done. So now we have to start making that transition into this 22nd century adaptive learning ecosystem, where now leaders and teachers are being lean and applying those innovative design principles to this level. I don't want to say fidelity, but to this level of understanding, where we're continuously testing our practices.
And just to amplify on that, like at some level, like 21st, 22nd, I don't get caught up in those terms, because the point is what you just said at the end, I think is the point to deliver there, which is it's not about fidelity or compliance. It's about understanding so that there's usefulness to it, so that we're actually making progress, right? I'm not interested in a bunch of foot soldiers. I mean, that's the old paradigm,
That's
right? I want you figuring out what's the right way to make progress. And if you understand these principles, we're all going to make a heck of a lot more progress together.
Absolutely. We as educators have to realize that answers are not going to be binary, but we're going to have to continue to experiment to look for new solutions and new ideas to continue to
By the
iterate.
way, actually, can we just stay on that for 2 seconds also, which is I sometimes see folks be like, oh, like this is the way you do it. And they disregard the fact that like across town in some other neighborhood, a teacher's doing it a different way. It's okay for there to be different. Like, it's okay. We don't have to be, like classical education versus Montessori. It's okay. Like, I could make room for both, right? Like, I just think sometimes we're like, it's got to be all this. And it's like, there's not a lot of parts of society where it's all one thing. We want it to work for both of us. Like, let's keep moving.
Absolutely. And Mike, it goes back to what we believe in and trying to create this in education, autonomous environments for intentional interrogation, so that we can be able to investigate for best practices, or I should say next practices for
Yeah,
Generation
next
Z and
practices.
Generation Alpha. Michael, last question. Woo! I felt like I was on the hot seat interviewing you, Mike. But Michael, I don't know if I can hold you to this. I always tell my previous guests that I'm only going to limit you to three words, but I have one of the creators of disruptive innovation. So again, I want you to be able to apply those concepts with this question. What three words? I'm not going to limit you, Michael, but what three words do you want our audience to leave with regarding innovative trends, or innovation trends, I should say, in the AC stage of education?
Say purposeful, iterative, and this is a cheat, learning mindset.
Michael, please expand on each of those.
Yeah, you bet. So purposeful. Why are we doing this? What's the goal? What are we trying to achieve? Right? What are we trying to? Why do we care about this? Right? Let's not just, oh, I heard two Michaels talking, and said AI is important. We got to do AI. No. Like, be purposeful. Be intentional about it. Right? Iterative. It's something we talked about, but I want you to have that test and learn mindset. I want you to say, we're going to figure out what's right in this circumstance. I think that this is the other thing. Like, we do some study somewhere and it shows some great outstanding outcomes, and we're like, we got to do it exactly that way. But we don't recognize communities, interests, priorities, like all sorts of things are different in different places. And so figuring out the right way to implement it in yours requires iteration. And then the third one, learning mindset. Just be real. We're all learners. And what a cool thing to be the educators learning to show the young generation that we are all learners. Like, what a cool opportunity. So you got to have that learning mindset.
Absolutely, Michael. Purposeful, iterative, and learning mindset in the phrase that resonates with me. And we'll stick with me, Michael. We are all learners. Michael, thank you for coming on VFE. It is an absolute honor. If my audience or viewers want to reach out to you, contact you with any questions after this episode, how would they be able to reach you?
Yeah, you bet. My Substack is Michael B. Horn, Future of Education. If you subscribe, you can just message me or comment with me there, and I'll engage directly, or obviously on the platform formerly known as Twitter X. I'm at Michael B. Horn, and LinkedIn as well. You can get a hold of me. So those are probably three good ways as any.
Absolutely, Michael. It has been an absolute honor to have you on Voices for Excellence. This was informative for me. So if this was, you know, informative for me and interviewing someone that I absolutely looked up to for years, I'm sure my audience is going to have their notebooks out, their pens ready to play this back. So Michael, from Boston, thank you. I'm in New York now. So, you know, I gotta write the whole
Yankee dish a little. I get it.
Rangers. I mean, you won the championship. I haven't seen.
We got
that.
The Celtics. You know, the Celtics is the one that I care about. I grew up like diehard Celtics fan, so that's the one I care about. Your Yankees are looking better than the Sox this year, but we'll hang in.
We are. But Michael, I can tell you this: the Knicks are coming for you this year. We're stacking up.
All right. Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
I'll make sure I'll call you and rub it in when we beat you. But
it
Michael,
sounds good.
Thank you for coming on the show. Truly appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.